This is the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President, Tony Perkins.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Coming up, the House Select Investigative Panel on Infant Lives held their first hearing this week, questioning doctors on the ethics of fetal tissue research. What did they learn? The chairman of the House Select Investigative Panel, Tennessee Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, is here. And the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments in what is probably one of the most important abortion cases in decades, Texas's HB 2 that provides regulations for abortion clinics. Where could the justices be leaning? FRC Senior Fellow for Legal Studies Kathy Roos was in the courtroom, and she joins me with her analysis. Also, when we stand firm for our first freedom, our freedom to believe and live our lives according to those beliefs, we find we're not alone. Pastor David Myers joins me to highlight the latest win in Brevard County, Florida, against a bathroom bill in the local school district. The website, TonyPerkins.com, you can find out more about today's guest, our topics. You can also sign up for my daily updates, which come out Monday through Friday. Also, our alerts that keep you up to date on what's happening and what you can do to make a difference. Again, that website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me and actually get my daily devotion, at T. Perkins. Again, that's at T. Perkins on Twitter. All right, this week, the House Select Investigative Panel on Infant Lives held their first hearing surrounding the ethics of fetal tissue research. Now, this is the first of many hearings. And the goal of the panel is to gather information and to get the facts about medical practices of abortion service providers and the business practices of the procurement organizations who sell baby body parts. Now, you remember, this whole thing was triggered by the Center for Medical Progress and their undercover videos tracking Planned Parenthood and what they were doing in trafficking in baby body parts. I caught up with the chairman of that committee, Marsha Blackburn, joined me to talk about what they found out in their first hearing. Congresswoman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you. It is so good to be with you. Thanks so much.
Well, we spoke, I think it was last week, anticipating this first hearing. Let me ask you this. What progress yesterday was made toward the goal of the panel? Was there information gained yesterday?
Yes, there was. And, you know, as I told you, we felt like starting to focus on the bioethics was the right thing to do. And it certainly was, and we did get some great information yesterday. One of the things that was so intriguing was we had the Democrat witnesses agree with us that the forms that some of these clinics are using, we had copies of some of the statements that would be misleading or would be inappropriate information, and that looking at fetal tissue research, that you don't have the big advancements coming out of fetal tissue research, that you can do this with other stem cell lines and other components, other research, and that you don't have to go about this issue of harvesting, that aborting babies and then utilizing that tissue for that purpose, everybody agreed that is something that is wrong. And what we heard from the witnesses was, even if there is some fetal cell line research that you're going to use, that with miscarriages and with cord blood and with other areas, you can get what you need. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be using the parts or dissecting a baby that has been aborted. And then everyone agreed that it is wrong for there to be any kind of profit motive around this, and that's what we have seen in these procurement organizations. So we got a good foundation to get started on the rest of our work in order to be able to move forward and deliver a product by the end of the year.
You know, Marcia, I think it's extremely important to that point, and I don't think most Americans realize this. It's very much like embryonic stem cell research. It's not led to any cures. But the fact that no current medical treatments exist that have required using fetal tissue for their discovery or development, that is an extremely important point. You don't need this, as you just said, and it's not being used for any scientific purpose right now in terms of a treatment. And there's other ways to do that. So it is really important, I think, to zero in on the ethics of this as well as the implication. I mean, what good comes from it? Not that that justifies it, but there's nothing right now coming from it.
That's exactly right. So then you have to say, for what reason are they using this and what is acceptable? Is growing, taking the fetal cells and using that to grow body parts, is that something? We talked about the immunized mice. You don't have to have fetal tissue for that. You don't need this for the replacement, for replacement body parts. You know, there are just so many things there, Tony. I would encourage people to go to the Energy and Commerce Committee website and put in Select Committee on Infant Lives, and our website will pop up. They can go to my Facebook page. They can pull up the hearing and see the transcript. C-SPAN carried it. And it is just, I thought it was a very fruitful use of our time because we were able to establish that parameter of what is and isn't ethical. And as we touched on last week, it has been since 1988 when Ronald Reagan was president. That was the last time that there was a deep dive, if you will, and a look into fetal tissue research. Technology has changed.
Oh, yes.
Since then. Medical research has changed, my goodness. And there are things that we ought not to be doing. There are things that ought not to be allowed, and our panel will make recommendations to the authorizing committees about what they ought to and ought not to be doing.
You're listening to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. That was Congresswoman Marcia Blackburn of Tennessee. We're going to be back with more of this weekend edition of Washington Watch after the break. When we come back, we're going to be talking with a senior fellow for legal studies here at the Family Research Council, Kathy Roos, who was inside the courtroom earlier this week when the Supreme Court heard the oral arguments on the Texas Abortion Clinic Regulation Bill. That's coming up next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Does the U.S. Senate have a responsibility to confirm anyone that President Obama nominates to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat? After the passing of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, an intense political debate has emerged around this crucial question. The Constitution does not require conditions or limitations on the manner in which the Senate must act if the President nominates. Family Research Council believes that the Senate should not consider or deliberate on any nominee President Obama puts forward to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat. This is because the President has consistently nominated Supreme Court justices and federal judges who view the Constitution as a malleable political instrument instead of a text with a defined meaning based on the consensus held by the Founding Fathers. To learn more about this critical issue, including 8 helpful questions and answers, visit frc.org/Supreme Court. That's frc.org/Supreme Court.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, on Wednesday, the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments in what is one of the most important abortion cases, really, in decades that has come before the court. And as we discussed on the program, HB 2 in Texas requires doctors to have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles of their clinic. Now, this is obviously for safety purposes to protect women in cases of a botched abortion. It's designed to protect them from men like the Philadelphia abortionist Kermit Gosnell. Now, the court seemed to be somewhat split on the issue, and without the voice of Justice Scalia, we'll have to wait to see what the conclusion will be of the remaining eight justices. FRC Senior Fellow for Legal Studies Kathy Roos was inside the courtroom, and she joined me earlier this week to give her analysis. Kathy, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Tony.
All right, give us your impressions from the oral arguments today before the court.
Well, I'll tell you the things that are clear. And what is clear watching the court this morning is that the four liberals on the court, Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan, cannot wait to strike down this law as unconstitutional. They made no bones about where they are on health and safety regulations. They think that they were simply a ruse and that Texas is just trying to target abortion clinics. So the real question, unfortunately, again, is where is Kennedy going to go? Mm-hmm. If Kennedy sides with them, we lose, of course. If Kennedy sides with Thomas and Alito in that group, then the best we can do is a 4-4. But that's not bad because a 4-4 will allow the lower court ruling to be upheld and the lower court upheld the regulations. So a 4-4 split is a good ruling for Texas and for the precedent that will set.
Well, we're most likely to see, if that's the case, if the court is split on it, we're most likely to see this come back before the court again because there are other similar laws that are being challenged. In fact, Louisiana's law is being challenged. It just had a favorable ruling before the Fifth Circuit, and that could be appealed to the Supreme Court as well, could it not?
It could. It, in fact, they are. I learned today that they are appealing. And so that case is on its way. There's another case out of Mississippi that was put on hold while this case went forward. So, yes, the case would not be over. The question would not be over if it's a 4-4 split. But we would sort of live on to find another day if it's a 4-4 split. And one interesting thing that may allow the court to get out of ruling on the merits altogether is that Justice Kennedy himself twice brought up the suggestion of, does it make any sense to remand the case, send it back down to a lower court so we can gather more evidence? He said that twice, and he seemed to have a sympathetic ear on the part of the Chief Justice. Because the defenders of these abortion clinics kept making claims like, oh, the law is forcing clinics to close. Oh, all these clinics are closed and then women won't be able to be served and so on and so forth. And Kennedy and to the Chief Justice kept saying, well, where's the evidence? And show me in the record. That's not in the record. There's no evidence to support your claims. So Kennedy said, well, maybe we ought to go back down to the lower court and get some more evidence. So there's another kind of third way that we could go, and that mm-hmm. wouldn't be terrible either. We could live on to fight another day if they do that.
So you're suggesting, Kathy, that what they were saying about wanting further evidence is that the opponents of these laws who have brought the mm-hmm. suits are saying that this is designed and will have the effect of closing down all these clinics, denying women access to abortion facilities. Is that what they're claiming?
Exactly. That there would not be enough places for women to go and get abortions if this law were to go into effect.
Of course, one of the counter arguments, or maybe not a counter argument, but an issue that was brought before the court, which is really the genesis behind these laws, is the issue of women's health and well-being. And so would those four liberal justices on the court sacrifice the health of women just to ensure that abortion goes unregulated?
Right. Well, and that's exactly the question. The discussion did come up that, if the purpose of these laws is to improve the health and safety of women, then that is squarely within court precedents, in particular right. the Casey decision that Kennedy himself authored. So there's a nice Kennedy hook. You know, there's a reason for him to do the right thing. This could be the continuing legacy of his Casey decision back in 1992, where he and others held that there should be allowed to be reasonable regulations on abortion. And the most reasonable of regulations is keeping women safe. I mean, how can you argue with that?
So,
But how can the
opponents of these regulations can't say just because they're unwilling to invest the money to bring these clinics up to standard so that the health of women is in fact protected. How can they use that as a defense against the laws? I mean, you could use that on anything if that's the case.
That is my biggest problem with the other side's argument. And unfortunately, they didn't seem to be called on that in court today. I would have loved for that particular argument to be made, and it really wasn't made. I mean, all the liberal justices just kind of took as whole cloth the argument that, well, these are forcing these clinics to close. And it really wasn't brought out in oral argument that maybe the clinics are just refusing to follow the law. Maybe they're just refusing to spend any more money to improve safety for the women, you know? So
yeah,
very good point.
Yeah, we've talked about that this week on the program because I authored one of the we were talking earlier in this week. We had Mike Johnson, who actually argued the Louisiana case before the court there, and he actually was helpful to me back in 1999 when we passed one of the first clinic regulation acts, and it did result in some clinics closing, but those clinics closed because they refused to come up to the standards because they didn't want to invest the money in their facilities, which, you know, you wouldn't treat, I mean, a veterinary clinic has to meet certain standards, and you don't say, oh, well, just because you don't want to invest the money, we're going to let you continue to operate. I mean, we have standards.
Right. You know, along the lines of standards, I was very happy to see that the Gosnell situation came up in oral argument maybe half a dozen times. You know, anytime we're able to talk about Gosnell, it's the other side is in a bad place. So it came up a few times. The liberal justices were ready to try to smack it down and stop that conversation. Well, that's Pennsylvania. This is Texas. That wouldn't happen in Texas. And that couldn't happen. And that's not relevant, but it kept coming up and up and up. And then finally, Justice Alito said, well, all right, let's look at Texas. And he stated that Whole Women's Health, which is the name of the abortion centers at issue, was inspected, and they did find holes large enough for rats to come through, and they did find sanitary problems. So you can dismiss Gosnell, but there are real problems that are being addressed in Texas. So I was so grateful for Alito to bring that up.
Well, even I saw that where they made the comparison to Philadelphia or to Pennsylvania, but they had regulations as well on the books that required inspections. They just weren't enforced. So I don't see how you can say it's any different. They still had some regulations or minimal. And just because officials weren't enforcing them, they've put new teeth into to the laws. And I think, you know, states have a right and I think a responsibility to be proactive in addressing situations that led to the horrors there in Philadelphia.
And that's exactly what Solicitor General, the point he made. He was basically making the point, we don't have to wait till we have a Gosnell in Texas. Once, you know, the world learned about that kind of horror, we're taking preemptive steps to make sure that that doesn't happen to women in Texas. I mean, it's perfectly logical if you are willing to look at logic. But when it comes to this issue, so many lawyers and judges and justices just aren't willing to. And so the takeaway, I mean, I don't think anybody came out of the courtroom sort of cheering, wow, that went well. Because we know we've got four lined up against us, and we only have three on our side, and there's Kennedy. So, and he really didn't, you know, even when he's very verbal, you can't really predict how he's going to vote from what he says. But he really was basically quiet most of the argument. So it's really a big question mark where he's going to come down.
That was Kathy Roos, Senior Fellow for Legal Studies here at the Family Research Council, giving her analysis on what took place earlier this week inside the courtroom at the United States Supreme Court. All right, when we come back, exciting story out of Florida, where a pastor and others in the community stood up, and when it looked like they had no chance, they actually won. That's coming up next with Pastor David Myers of Florida. Don't go away. We're back with more right after this.
What does it mean to be equal? According to the dictionary, equal means the same for each person. Last year, the so-called Equality Act was introduced in Congress by adding sexual orientation and gender identity as protected categories under federal civil rights law. This act would give special perks to some people just because they identify as homosexual or transgender. It's important to remember that many bills introduced in Congress have positive-sounding titles that hide their true agendas. The Equality Act is a perfect example. This bill puts people who live out their faith on unequal footing under the law. It imposes sexual orientation and gender identity provisions on religious schools and universities, rejects the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and so much more. FRC's new publication on this legislation is a brief summary of the dangers this bill poses towards those who hold a biblical view of marriage and the family. Visit frc.org/equalityact to learn more. Do you enjoy history, museums, pandas, and national monuments? And are you looking to gain work experience at a Christian organization in the heart of our nation's capital? If the answer is yes, come spend a semester as an intern in Washington, D.C. with the Family Research Council. You will get a chance to experience the rich history and culture of our nation's capital and attend congressional hearings, events, rallies, and lectures all over D.C. Further, you will develop your skills in research and writing about the sanctity of life, marriage and family, religious liberty, and many other policy issues. Family Research Council's internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. As an intern, you will gain invaluable public policy experience in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. To learn more and apply to the program, visit frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this weekend. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. You can also find out information about our daily broadcast right there at the website, tonyperkins.com. Now, one of the things we talk about on our daily program and this weekend program is the issue of religious freedom. It's critical. The freedom to believe and live your life according to your belief. And that is under attack in America today. We're seeing it as communities pass these special rights for sexual orientation, gender identity, and it's putting people at risk. And we're seeing this in our schools. Well, in Brevard County, Florida, the school board decided they were going to adopt this policy. And when word got to parents, well, something happened. The senior pastor of First Pentecostal Church of Palm Bay in Florida, David Myers, joined me earlier this week to describe what took place when parents got involved. Pastor Myers, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Great to be with you.
Well, Pastor, I'm going to start with the fact that you have a daughter that's in the public school system, and this came to your attention. You were involved in this. You spoke before the school board at the meeting. What was your message to the school board?
Well, Tony, you're right. I do have a girl that's in first grade in the public school system, and as you mentioned, I pastor a church, and I was a concerned parent and pastor. And we had received word that the school board was attempting to add these policies that would give protective status for sexual orientation and gender identity. But as you well know, would discriminate against people with sincerely held religious beliefs. Mm-hmm. And so word got out, and as we were leaving to go to the meeting where they would have public comments, we had heard that there were five school board members, and four of them had already committed to vote for this, so it was a lost cause.
Wow.
Well, I said, you know, we need to go down there and we need to speak anyhow, because when I was in law school, I had the opportunity to study under Antonin Scalia, and one thing that he told us that I never forgotten, that is, even when you're in the minority, you need to speak with authority. So I said, well, we're going to go out there and we're going to speak anyhow, and we're going to stand against this, and if we lose, we lose. Well, when I got there, the place was full of people. I mean, the Christians, the parents, the community, everybody turned down, and everyone spoke, and it was 95% opposed to this. And the school board ended up totally changing their position, and all five of the school board members voted against it going forward. And that was totally because of the turnout of the community.
That Pastor Myers has to be extremely encouraging to those who took the time to get involved, even though they were told it was a lost cause.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that was so encouraging to me, was that the Christians and the community showed up. Because, Tony, a lot of times we don't win these things because either, one, we're not informed, or number two, we're informed, but we don't think that our showing up is going to matter. But I saw firsthand where when people get together and say enough is enough, because this was going to allow people of the opposite gender to be able to go in. Like if a boy in high school wanted to go into a girl's locker room and change clothes, that there would be no way for school officials to stop them, even though they were anatomically a male. If he was saying he felt like a female that day, then he couldn't even be questioned on it. And you know,
and those who would question it would be punished.
That's correct. In fact, there is policies that go out, and I got a copy of it. They sent it to every school board official, a group out of Orlando called Equality Florida, and they sent out this what they call Schools in Transition, and it's to give specific policy guidelines, and it said that schools were not to question any individual. They were not to be the gatekeeper of any individual, whether they had an ulterior motive or not, that would say that they feel like that they're transitioning in their gender and they should go into another. And they said plainly in this policy manual that if a student was uncomfortable with a transgender person or a transgender identity individual coming into that opposite gender locker room, that the individual that felt uncomfortable should go to a different restroom. But at no time should an individual with gender issues be forced to go into a separate restroom.
And that was Pastor David Myers of the First Pentecostal Church in Palm Bay, Florida. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. An encouraging story. And this is really the message. You and I have a first freedom, the freedom of religion, the freedom of speech, the freedom to assemble with others. You know what? If we don't use those freedoms, we lose them. It's time for us to stand and use those freedoms in a loving way, but in a firm way. And I encourage you to be a part of impacting your community by standing for those truths. To find out more how you can get connected with the Family Research Council, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, we're out of time for today, but I want to thank you again for joining us. And I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians chapter 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234.